Welcome to WorkWise, the growth mindset for wisdom at work. I'm Ken Kennard, coach and chief creative officer at Accent Interactive. My co-host is Mike Boyes of Credo Consulting, a firm that helps leaders thrive and teams prosper. I met Mike first in the late 1990s when he and I were dating sisters. Since then, we both married into the family, so I've been picking his brain on topics like conflict, communication, personality styles, leadership, and how to create a healthy workplace. So let's jump into the conversation where we started talking about how our mindset can affect how motivated we are at work.
So Ken, I'm beginning to feel like we're kind of like Dan and Chip Heath, where our worlds are converging.
Yeah.
So over the last few years, you've been really focusing in on helping creatives do their work and helping them learn how to be creatives. And even more recently than that, you've become fascinated with the idea of what motivates creatives. And that's kind of the merging of our worlds in a lot of ways. And so I'm curious, what's been this fascination? What's put you on this course?
Well, I think part of it is personal and part of it is something I observe in the clients that I coach. I'm interested in what motivates us because it gets us, motivation is kind of like the power or the energy that helps us accomplish what we want to accomplish. And so I've been interested in that because it seems like it's kind of hard to get a handle on it.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of ephemeral and, people are like, I don't know, it's kind of invisible. And yet it seems to be really important.
Yeah. People don't understand. They don't understand what motivates themselves, let alone other people. You know, do you remember when we went to the Vatican? And do you remember the mosaics that we saw?
Yeah.
So I kind of view motivation as a mosaic. There's all these tiny pieces and they fit together. And it's so hard to get a handle on what motivates because it's a mosaic.
Okay.
And if you focus in on a couple of the pieces, you're not seeing the picture.
Okay.
And so it's complicated.
So what pieces would you say are in the mosaic?
Well, there's a lot, right? I think the things that have been kind of capturing my interest of late is this thing that Carol Dweck. She's this big time researcher in the world of education and developmental psychology, and she's coined this term mindset. And it's hit me as a huge thing, largely because I see the dynamics in my life and my family's life and in my coaching clients and in my leadership consulting clients and all that. I see it everywhere and I see the effect of it. And so that's one of the biggest things that's been hitting me recently and I've been talking to a lot of folks about.
So what does she mean by mindset?
Yeah. So what she's found is that, roughly people kind of fall into kind of two buckets. That's a real simple way to put it. But there's this one bucket of people who, what she calls having the growth mindset. And people in the growth mindset say, you know what? Sure, people have abilities and those abilities and talents kind of have caps, but people are so elastic and their abilities are so great that even with whatever ability you have, if you work it and you learn and you persist, you can stretch that thing and do phenomenal things. And so really, we're not limitless, but we have great capacity. And so what they wind up doing is trying hard and learning and getting feedback and doing lots of great things. And they say, well, I can grow. And I can grow into do bigger things. And then there's the other group, right? And so, by the way, as I think I've said to you before, you are the epitome of the growth mindset. And so this is where the question that you always ask your kids, what do we learn from that?
Yeah.
Right? Everything's a growth or learning experience. That's kind of like the core, the heart of a growth mindset person.
Yeah.
Then there's the other kind of person, and they're the fixed mindset. And what they're saying is, I have fixed talents.
So, right? Like, there's limits.
There's limits.
They're emphasizing the limits.
They're emphasizing the limits.
Okay.
And so they say, well, I have a limited bucket. I got the small bucket of talents or abilities. And everything's kind of a test of how capable I am. So I don't say when I do things I can learn. I say if I don't do good at it, I'm not good at it.
So it sounds like failure. It sounds like you're a pass-fail kind of.
It's a test of their abilities and their capacities.
Yeah.
And so I have limited capacities. And so if I don't do good at something, then I'm not good at it. And that tells me how good I am. And so therefore, everything's a risk, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's a test of my capacity and I'm not sure I can do it, I'm going to avoid this thing. And so they wind up staying away from things, and you know they tend not to have high self-esteem because they want looking at this, look at themselves as having had all these failures because they've done things and not done as good of them as they'd like to.
That just makes me sick just hearing that. It's like, oh
yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Why would you do that to yourself? Yeah. That just sounds like that's just brutal.
It's
right?
Craziness, right?
Yeah,
it sounds crazy.
Right.
There's all these effects of that.
Right. So right off the bat, I'm thinking the effects could be like, number one, you're going to try to avoid as many tests as possible because every test or activity is a potential failure.
Yeah.
Right? So you've got a lot of avoidance going on. Then if you do accept a challenge or activity that will test you, you feel like there might be a lot of anxiety about it because right. You don't want to fail. You can't be a failure. This is going to be a reflection on your person.
Right, yeah.
So you're going to be all clammed up, yeah. Which is going to affect how well you can perform, which is going to then be more likely to produce the failure that you...
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you know, so one of the ways that a great story that kind of tells how this affects people is when I was a kid, I was a swimmer. And I was a natural fish. And so the story goes, when I was 8 years old, I was at a swim meet. And they said, oh, Mike, we have lane 6 open. Do you want to do butterfly? I had never done butterfly before in my life, literally. I said, sure. I jumped in. I dove in, right? And I won the race.
Wow.
I creamed people. First time out. Natural swimmer. When I took swim lessons, the teachers would say, just watch Mike. And... like, because I did it better than they did, right? But then there came a time when other kids' bodies started growing bigger, and the effects of their work, their practice in the pool, started to rival my natural talent, and then started to surpass me. And then I did what fixed mindset people do: I gave up, because my reasoning was, by golly, if I have to practice and work hard at it, I must not be that good. Right? So I avoided potential great accomplishment and achievement, and I never learned the lesson well that persistence and hard work pays off. And so I feared failure as opposed to looked for learning and growth.
Yeah.
So how does this relate to your world?
Well,
creatives.
It seems to me that failure can be really demotivating. It's one of the things that can take the motivational wind right out of your sails. And so if you have that, I'm just putting this together, if you have that fixed mindset, then you're really setting yourself up for taking the energy out of accomplishing the very thing that you wanted to do to prove that you... were talented or capable
right.
or could
yeah.
accomplish something,
yeah.
right? So that makes me think if it's possible to shift the mindset from this fixed mindset to more of a learner's mindset, then you not only are making those challenges a lot easier to take on, but you're also able to sustain a higher level of motivation.
Yes, you are.
So that you can actually... accomplish a lot more, because I think motivation really matters. Like when I've noticed when I'm like bored, tired, disinterested, just like demotivated, no energy for it. It's really hard to accomplish anything.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, just dragging myself through it is, you know, by sheer willpower or some other force.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing that you say about that, because it comes into sheer willpower. One of the things we've seen with growth mindset people is that when they are depressed and when they have no energy, And when they're not doing well, they continue to pick themselves up and press on. they do the things that bring success anyway. They get up in the morning, they have the habits, and they keep on pressing in and pressing on, and the fixed mindset folks don't. You know, one of the things, make a quick transition, is you wrote the blog recently on creatives, and you mentioned one of the things was procrastination. And that, you know, when you look at that, I was thinking about procrastination for creatives.
Yeah.
Why do they procrastinate? And I'm just thinking about creatives, and I'm thinking about the language we use with people when we see they have talent.
Yeah.
And we say things like, "You're so talented. What a great artist you are. I can't believe. Look at my son. He's such a great artist. Look at my son. He's such a great athlete. My kid is so smart. He did this so easily."
Yeah.
And what the language tells kids where their success comes from. Right? But when things get hard, and they eventually will, if the language we've used is "you're talented, you're great," then we set them up for the test mindset. And so they procrastinate because, what if I fail? And so there's a language difference. And so you hear that language, "you're so talented." So let me give you a little test here.
Yeah.
So what language do you think we should be using with people and with ourselves to tell us where success comes from?
Well, I think that certainly talent is part of it, but I don't think that talent is the part you can control.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I would say our language that has more to do with the things that we can control.
Yeah.
Such as, I'm hoping you'll tell us we can control our mindset.
Yeah.
Also, we can control the way we respond to challenges.
Yeah.
So we can control things like, did we show up?
Yeah.
Did we persist? Did we sustain a level of disciplined effort in the right direction?
Right.
Were we really considering the teaching and learning opportunities that were given to us and really putting them into play? Or were we squandering the words of our teachers and coaches and advisors? So I think if we focus on the things we can control, now we're into the territory where we can learn something.
Yeah.
So how well I performed or achieved is only partially a factor of how talented I was.
Right.
And it's much more interesting to look at, okay, well, what kind of preparation did you do?
Right.
What kind of character qualities were you demonstrating when you were getting ready for this? These sorts of things.
Yeah. And so if we are, you know, if you have a designer working on something, you know, if you say to them, "You're really talented. I like you have a great eye for that." You affirm them, and that's a good thing. And that kind of energizes them for the moment and tells them that you appreciate and value them. But if you want long-term motivation, long-term, and by the way, let's define motivation. Motivation is that thing that energizes you, gets you to move and act, and helps you persist despite obstacles.
Right.
So that designer's ultimately going to hit obstacles. Right. And so if you want to equip them to be motivated, you say things like, "You know what? I'm really glad that you kept at this when it got hard. I'm really impressed with how you took the feedback and used it, even though it was hard to hear. I'm super glad that you persisted at this, despite the fact that you had all these interruptions and it seemed impossible to do." And so you're telling them what you're attributing success to the things they control, as you said.
Yeah.
And so that gives a person what they need to motivate themselves, an attributional process to keep them going.
So it sounds like what you're saying is you're not only affirming them in a certain way, they're also going to internalize that way of affirmation. And you're hoping that then they will take on that learner's mindset and that way of seeing success as something that they can control, at least to some extent.
The pathway to success is through effort, motivation, learning, feedback, not through sheer talent or force.
Well, then that makes me think that some people might be inclined to leave a job or an environment, a community,
because
the feedback that they're getting is telling them, you know, you're only succeeding when you're talented and you're not succeeding, so you must not be talented. Why would you stay in that environment?
Yeah, and that's what I see in the workplace, because people, you know, we don't give in most circles a lot of feedback. We don't. And the feedback we tend to give, especially in the last in the last generation or two, has been, you're wonderful. How talented you are. We're affirming everybody. And, you know, with the, you know, the millennials, we've told them that you're wonderful. With the generation, you know, with the boomers, the language was how hard you worked to separate yourself from other people.
Yeah.
And it creates motivation as opposed to that. So a person goes to work, and when they get the little bit of feedback they get, and they've been taught the fixed mindset, it says you're not talented, you're not valued. And that's how they interpret, as opposed to saying, oh, I have to work harder, I have to try new things, I have to do things differently to succeed, and that's going to equip me. It's an equipper, an edifier, not a destroyer.
Yeah. So what about what would you say to the person who's in an environment that they can't necessarily control how other people are giving them feedback, right?
Right,
I mean, they can request, but if you're in an environment where you're not getting a learner mindset kind of feedback,
right,
you still need to stay motivated.
Right.
So now what?
Well, yeah, the important thing is the receiver, right? It doesn't much matter in this context what kind of, you know, the mindset of the person giving it. It's the mindset of the person receiving it, right? And so it's you know, take it, I learned from this. What's the nugget? You know, so they might have delivered it harshly. They might not have used all the nicest words. They might have been not 100% on target. But the question is what can I take from this and learn from? How am I going to use this? Not, oh, why am I such a failure? Right? And I am a failure.
Yeah.
And, so I'm just going to avoid that situation from now on where the boss might tell me where I'm going to look bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a powerful thing, this mindset stuff.
Yeah.
It really is.
So I was thinking about a different kind of mindset as it relates to motivation over the life cycle of a project.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So what I've noticed in myself and in other creative people is that there's a really high amount of motivation, especially at the beginning of a task,
we're all excited.
Like, oh, this is going to be so cool. I love this. Right. It's fresh. It's novel. It's interesting to me, right? That's why I'm starting it.
Yeah, we're excited. We're excited right now. This is novel. This is new, right? 10 more minutes. We're done.
Right. So then there's also, I've noticed, a spike of energy as it gets toward the end.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, we're almost done. We're almost ready to release this or publish it or show people or something that marks that this thing, whatever it is, has been accomplished.
The proverbial light at the end of the tunnel.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So there's this rush of motivation and energy there. But the problem is in the middle, when it's really hard to sustain a lot of motivation, a lot of energy when things are just kind of in the doldrums in the middle. And that's why I looked at this article, and we'll link to this in the show notes, but Stuck in the Middle, The Psychophysics of Goal Pursuit. This is Bonezzi, Brendel, I don't even know how to pronounce these, DeAngelis. So,
you know, if you keep on trying,
maybe I could get this.
If you could get that right, I bet.
Yeah.
If you did some more work at pronouncing the name,
Or maybe I'll just decide I'm not good at this.
You're not good
at
pronouncing things.
I'm a failure at pronunciations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll pick a mindset. But anyway, what they write on is just about that and how, and they've kind of explained, you know, why people do this. And what they said for their explanation, they said the reason we have a lot of more motivation at the beginning is that we're measuring how much we've accomplished from the start.
Right.
And it's a lot more than zero, right? I mean, if you've read five pages of a long book, it's so much progress compared to where you were when you started. And every page, I mean, think about it, going from five pages to six pages, what are you gaining? That's another like 20%.
Yeah.
Which is a huge amount.
If I were 20% taller, 20% lighter.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
So then, and the same is true at the end. Think about, when you get to the end, you're not measuring how far you've come. Now you're measuring how far you have left to go.
One more mile in a marathon.
Yes, exactly. Well, a mile in a marathon, that's totally doable. Like, you're almost there.
Yeah.
And in fact, every 100 feet is a pretty good percentage, right?
As you can almost fall forward over the line, right?
Right. But in the middle, in the middle of a marathon, what is 100 feet? It's it's nothing. It doesn't even, you can't even see that you've made any more progress.
Right.
It's not even discernibly measurable. So
towards the end goal.
Towards the end goal. So I got to thinking about this, and I'm thinking, what can we do when we're in the middle to work with this mindset?
Yeah.
Either how far we've come or how far we have left to go.
And yeah.
I thought, what if you just created these milestones along the way?
Right.
So then instead of saying how much you have left to go to the end, it's how much you have left to go, in this chapter or in this leg or whatever.
Yeah.
You just get these short-term measurable things where you can quickly and more frequently switch to this mindset of having only a little bit left to go and see if that might play. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, before that, I mean, obviously, I think that's a great thing. You're creating the milestones. What I'm curious about is how that translates for creatives. So a person writing a book or making a painting or designing a website.
Right. So all of those things can be broken down into smaller tasks.
Right.
And those smaller tasks could be milestones that are measurable. And they could even be celebrated.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to reward myself. I'm going to do something I really enjoy. Maybe it's going to see a movie, going out to eat. I'm going to spoil myself in some little way. Okay.
When
I accomplish a certain thing as a way of celebrating having accomplished this much of it.
Right. Right.
So that along the way, instead of it being an 8-month, 10-month, 2-year, 3-year project, it can be broken down in a way. So. Yeah. Anyway.
So giving yourself smaller things to set your sights on.
Right.
So if I'm a painter, sketching it out, or finding my location.
Right.
Or, you know, if I'm a writer, it's the outline. Or it's developing a character.
Mm-hmm.
Or those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. What are those things? And it occurs to me that what becomes really critical there, and I don't know, you know more about this than I do, is the educational process for a creative to be trained in what are the processes that you go through to create something.
Yeah.
So that you can say, this is a meaningful step I've accomplished, as opposed to, it's only meaningful when my painting is in the art museum 200 years from now.
Right.
You know, who's going to see that?
Yeah.
What's a meaningful accomplishment?
Yeah. I was dealing with this with a client that's doing some writing, and her husband was asking her, when is it going to be done?
Oh.
And that can just kill
the
motivation, because when you're starting out, you have to think about how much there is to do. And what he's basically saying is, you know, give me, I'm getting impatient here.
Right.
Give me a timeline. Give me a, you know, when is it going to be done? And what does done even mean? Right. I mean, when you're first writing it, done could mean I'm done with the outline.
Right.
And then after a while I'm done with some of the research. And then after a while I'm done with my first draft.
Right. Right.
But when you're done with your first draft, you're not done.
No.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Right.
And you have the sense that sometimes you have the sense that I don't even know what all I need to do.
Right.
Because until I have the outline, I don't even know how much research there is. Until I have done the research, I don't know how much writing there is.
Right.
And so on.
Yeah. And that goes back to kind of the educational process.
Yeah.
Is knowing what the stages are, what work has to be done, having gone through it a few times.
Yeah.
And so that you can see what's meaningful and where I am. But if you don't know, if you haven't been there, you don't know the process, it's easy to get lost in the way and to feel like there's so much to do. There's no, it gets into having a real goal. I'm just dealing with ambiguity. So you know, in order to set those sights meaningfully in that middle section, because that's where we are, we're talking that middle section, how do I keep motivated?
Yeah.
I need to set those concrete goals. But in order to set those concrete goals, I need to know the process.
Yeah.
And it helps that if I've been through it, or I've had a guide to help me do that.
Yeah. What helps me is to take that process and then make it concrete.
Yeah.
For me, I'm very visual. So I would map it out.
Yeah.
You know, put it on the wall. Here's where I am. Here are the steps that I can see. I can change this later, but for now, this is going to be, you know, so I can check things off as I go. And
so
I'm thinking,
important.
Wow, I'm 20%.
Right.
Through.
Yeah.
And I just finished this section or this part.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's a certain amount of, you know, I take a breath. When a person says to me, when's it going to be done? You say, actually, I just finished.
Let me tell you what I've done.
Let me tell you what I just finished.
Yeah.
I just finished this section.
Yeah. 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 And so you mentioned something else, and that is the visual.
Yeah.
That makes it concrete, but it's more than concrete because we're visual creatures.
Yeah.
And so having a visual image of where we are, and that's something I always encourage my clients to do for their teams, to motivate them, is to show them what they've accomplished. Because sometimes when you're in a production atmosphere, it doesn't feel like a creative endeavor.
Yeah.
You're doing the same thing over and over. Well, how do I know I'm achieving anything?
Yeah.
I come to work and I do the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, how fast are we doing it? What are our quality goals? What's our team trying to accomplish? And I always encourage folks to put visuals on the wall to help them keep motivated, because it's concrete. But it's visually concrete, which makes it even better. So I like that, the milestone thing that you're telling folks, you're encouraging folks to do. That's fantastic.
Any other ideas come to mind in terms of in the middle there, what can help?
Well, I think, and you said before, do we have a choice? And it's choosing how we frame things.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so it's vitally important to know and to embrace that we do have a choice in how we frame things.
Yeah.
And to manage our minds and to manage our impulses and manage our thoughts to say, I'm going to frame this in a way that keeps me motivated. You know, Daniel Goleman's done a lot of work in what he calls emotionally intelligent people. One of those pieces of that is how we manage our own motivation, right? And so part of that's choosing how we're going to view things. I'm going to choose how I'm going to look at things. That's like when you come home to your house at night, you know, and you're remodeling. You can walk around to the backside of the house and say, I'm discouraged because the backside's not done yet. Or you can say, you know what? I'm going to look at the beautiful part in the front and say, look what we've done. I'm going to choose to look at the front, not the back. I'm going to choose to look back and see how much I've accomplished.
Yeah.
And say, that's what I'm going to focus my mind on. I'm going to choose to say, I'm in the middle now. I'm going to choose to say, you know what? There's this middle thing I have to get done. Or I'm going to choose to say, look how much I've accomplished.
Yeah.
Instead of moving to where our minds go, that switch over to how much is to come, I'm going to say, no. I'm going to choose to say, look how far we've come.
Mm-hmm.
Look how far I've gotten. That's going to motivate me. I'm going to choose which one I'm going to look at. So those concrete things you talked about,
mm-hmm.
make them manageable, concrete. But I'm also going to look to see what I've done is critical. But choice is another thing. And you mentioned choice is a critical thing for motivation as well. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure.
Okay. So you said, you know, I hope you're going to tell me we have choice. So what were you thinking?
We can choose our mindset, right? Well, because you were getting me a little depressed there with that whole swimming story.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I was feeling bad
yeah.
for you being that way.
Being such a loser. A loser with a fixed mindset, you know?
But tell me about, is it as simple as just changing your mindset by sheer willpower? Or what's the process like to go from being a fixed mindset or having a fixed mindset to having a growth mindset?
So it's kind of like the old psychologist thing, you have to be aware of it first, right? And then you have to choose to say, part of it is saying, you know, I do look at things like it's all about my talent. I do look at things and I say, if I were better, I would have been able to do that. And I don't say if I had worked harder or if I had sought more feedback or if I had educated myself more.
Yeah.
If I prepared more, I say, no, those are the things that count. And so I choose, I have to reframe myself. I have to catch myself when I'm saying those things and then say, no, here's how I'm going to look at this. So it's choosing which one you're going to do.
It sounds like you've done that. I don't know.
I'm learning to do that.
Okay.
I'm learning to do that.
What's helping you learn to do that?
Right.
Is it just that you heard about that and you decided, I'm going to try this because this might help? Or are there any things that have helped you along the way to either increase your awareness or increase your choosing?
Well, it's for me, it's two things, I think. One is that I've learned and I've observed the difference in people.
Oh, okay.
So it's a powerful personal lesson for me. It's very powerful. So and I've read all about it. You know, I've been reading Carol Dweck's work for a number of years now.
Yeah.
And because I see it in people, I'm excited about it. And because I see it in me, I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
And so I've read about it. I've educated myself.
So this is motivating you.
It's motivating me.
Because you're seeing examples of it in work.
I see examples.
And you're also, it sounds like, seeing that it's possible to change.
Well, and what's the, even maybe the most powerful thing, like for a lot of people, I see it in my kids. You know, and I see what I've created. I've created little monsters. I've created, you know, I've seen the talents of my kids and I've told them how talented they are. But now when they hit challenges, they want to put the pencil down.
Yeah.
And I realize that I've passed on my mindset. And so I'm intent to change that in myself and in my kids.
Yeah.
And so I'm busy in their lives and in my lives reframing. And I say to them and I say to myself, look at the work you put in. Look how hard you worked to get that done. I bet you that took a lot of effort, didn't it? You sure worked hard. You overcame that obstacle. That was frustrating, but you outlasted that frustration, didn't you? And so I'm saying those things to myself, and I'm saying those things to them. So that's really, it's kind of that simple in a lot of ways. It's that simple, but it's also believing and being willing to give up, letting go of former beliefs.
Right. You're saying yes to this. You're also saying no to that. So you have to be okay with the loss of that. What was that fixed mindset really giving you that you...
Oh.
Like what was the benefit of that? You chose it for a reason.
Well, as I never thought about that, but it's kind of a double-edged sword. On one edge is arrogance.
Yeah.
Aren't I so talented?
Right.
Look at me.
Yeah.
The other edge is an inferiority complex because feeling horrible because you can't be, if all you can do is live up to what your innate talents are.
Yeah.
All you have is capacity.
Yeah.
Not performance.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So all you can say is, and self-confidence, by the way, it comes from having done things, not from people telling you how wonderful you are. Right.
You're saying no to something and it was giving you something.
It was giving me
arrogance.
And
it sounds like what it gave you is just like this ego trip.
Yeah, yeah,
is basically what you're saying.
But it's two sides of the ego trip.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Thank you for reminding me. It's two sides of the ego trip.
Yeah.
It's the good side and the horrible side. And frankly, neither is attractive.
Yeah.
To anybody.
Right.
You know, and it's no wonder that people with the growth mindset accomplish more and feel better about themselves. And, you know, there's nothing good to be said, really, that I can think about the fixed mindset.
Okay. I was thinking that one of the implications of going with the growth mindset has to do with confidence in new situations.
Mm-hmm.
If you're approaching a new situation or a new challenge as a test, then... I just think of that as being real nervous. I'm not sure. I'm tentative. I have to know things in order to be able to control them in order to succeed. But with the learning mindset, seeing everything as new information, new possibilities, new potential, ways to lean into new muscles that I could strengthen by this opportunity. I don't know. I just feel lighter as I put that on. I feel like I'm a little more confident. I'm a little looser. Like I'm okay with whatever.
I'm going to learn an experiment, see what happens. And either way, I win. Because at the end, I've learned something. And when I learn something, I come out better.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
I love it.
But let's go back to choice. Because we talk about choosing the mindsets.
Right.
It's kind of choosing. We have a power of choice.
Okay.
And there's other choices that people who motivate themselves well do. And one of the things that they do is they see the capacity to mold their environment, to make it things that help them be successful and help them stay motivated, right? And so they surround themselves with people who will inspire them, who will motivate them, who show them the way, who are aspiring to do the same things and who support, who offer various kinds of support in their way. So a few years ago, I was at a conference and Bill Hybels, who was speaking about motivation, and he said something that I thought was ridiculous at the time. And now I see, of course, that he was right. And he said, surround yourself with people who are who will motivate you. Surround yourself with people who are high achievers and who choose to do things that are motivational to you.
Mm-hmm. And so why would you think that's ridiculous? That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
But what was the, what does that just seem far-fetched?
Well, because this is why, because I'm arrogant, right? Because in my head and in my learning about all my motivational theory and personality stuff, I hadn't learned about that yet. And I thought that's just silliness. Where's his data? Right.
Okay.
So now I've read the data, right?
Now you're on his side.
So I was better and smarter than Bill Hybels, and lo and behold, I was not.
Yeah.
But the important thing is, it connects to making choices to engineer your situation and your world.
Okay.
We started this conversation with your fascination with how to motivate creatives and how to keep them going and keep them on their course, and where's your head now? Like, what are you going to walk away from this conversation with? Or,
well, I think some of the key lessons are that you have control over your mindset. Mm-hmm. You can decide how to view things, right? Yeah. You have a perspective, but it doesn't have to be, you don't have to stay in the perspective you're in. Choosing a mindset that sees challenges as learning opportunities, and also framing it in a way that you can focus on what you can do and the effort and the character and the things that you can control.
Yeah.
I see coming out of this plans related to how to structure your environment and your relationships and your agenda and your habits in such a way that you can actually think of keeping your motivation high as a tangible goal that you have, even though motivation itself seems kind of ephemeral.
Yeah.
And I see coming out of it this a lot of strength for people who adopt this, because there's going to be a lot more creative energy, a lot more power there, a lot more juice in the tank to get really good, important work done.
Yeah. I tell you one thing that I'm kind of learning from you in here, and it might sound anathema to creatives, but the idea that creating is a project and that we can break it up into milestones, like, and manage it.
Yeah,
you know, because I've dealt with a lot of writers in organizations, and one of their complaints is you can't manage the creative process. But I think what we're talking about actually is that you actually have to manage that process and still be creative within it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's anathema at all. I think the smart creatives know enough about how they work. Some of that's quirky and unique to them. But if you look at a lot of them, there's a lot of things they have in common. And so this idea of managing the creative process is what motivates me to, you know, work with this process, work with these people, because if I didn't think you could work with it, then I wouldn't coach people on it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Sorry, you're on your own.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Ken, where can folks go to find out about you and your work?
So you can follow us at our agency, accentinteractive.com. That's A-C-C-E-N-T, interactive.com. Or for more information about my coaching, you can visit kenkennard.com. And how about you, Mike? Where can people follow you?
Well, they can follow me at credoconsulting.us, and that's spelled C-R-E-D-O consulting.us.
Cool. Thanks.